Well, if we talk books on Thursday, there's just about nobody I'd rather talk books with than Michael Perry. You may know him as a musician. You may know him as the host of 10 Show Radio, but he'll always be first and foremost in my mind, a wonderful author. And he and guests are presenting an adaptation of his book, Population 485, in a full show. Michael Perry on the line to talk to us a little bit about it this morning. Hey, Mike, good morning.
Howdy, how you doing?
Pretty well, because I get to talk to you about an adaptation of your book. This is the book is really an emotional roller coaster in the best possible way, because there are serious stories and there are laugh out loud stories and there are stories that are just things that make you go, hmm. So where did the idea come to adapt it into a stage show, and talk about some of the challenges?
Well, the challenge number one would be that I'd never done that before. I'd never adapted something for the stage. But let's see, the book came out in 2002. And about 5 or 6 years ago, I've got a buddy, a guy named Justin Vernon, and he used to be in my band, and I did some recording with him, and then he went on to found a band called Bon Iver, and he's won a couple of Grammys, and he tours the world.
And people refer to him generally as the guy that used to be in Michael Perry's band.
Right, and I tell him he'll come crawling back someday.
Oh, he will. Oh, absolutely.
And
yeah,
then,
no doubt.
And then we'll take a vote, because we're not entirely sure we'll let him back in.
Yeah.
Anyway,
okay.
we've been friends for years, and we wound up quite by accident being neighbors, even after we were friends. But about 5 or 6 years ago, he said one time, he said, "You know that book, Population 45? You should adapt it for the stage." And I just kind of remember thinking, "Yeah, that's fine." And then kept churning it around, and then last year I realized, you know, if I don't just sit down and do it, it's never going to happen. So I sat down, and the main crux of the work happened in over the course of 3 days in a little chicken coop out on Door County Peninsula up there. That chicken coop used to belong to Norb Bly, who was a well-known writer from that area. And I just hunkered down in there and just started cutting and rewriting. And when I came out 3 days later, I had the rough draft of a play, and then I sent it to a friend of mine who's a director, and from there it just became a series of revisions and experiments. And last year we did some preview shows, and after we did those, we tweaked it a little more, and then this year we've taken it on the road to a few different theaters around Wisconsin.
So, of course, my mind immediately goes to, why a chicken coop?
Because that was offered to me for free for 3 days. That's pretty easy for me.
Okay.
Far less symbolic than you would think, because I've got 2 chicken coops on my own farm, but I got to tell you, they are in no condition to be written in at the moment.
Were there chickens in this chicken coop at the time you were writing?
No, Norb Bly, throughout all the years that he wrote, he was known for writing from a little chicken coop that had actually been repurposed as a writing room.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So really, it was like a nice little office, sort of, and not really.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was fine. if you want to fact check me, we can take a trip over there. I can show it to you.
Well, you know, that's what we do here at KUMD. It's all about gotcha journalism and making sure that if it's called a chicken coop, you know, it's really a chicken coop. So
I believe that what I can say is it began its life and spent the majority of its life as a functioning chicken coop, yeah. And sometimes I'm a chicken, so maybe that worked out all right.
I guess it works. I guess it does indeed work. So
anyway, I got the thing cut down and edited, and then we've been taking it around. I think probably one of the biggest challenges, it wasn't a challenge because I'm used to this. I'm used to cutting and editing. But I quickly realized that in order to make the book into a play that people could survive, there would have to be a lot of cutting. And I think I did the math, and I had to cut about 80% of the text from the book.
So ooh.
It forces you to make some decisions. Otherwise, you've got a 16-hour play, and I guess I've probably got some ego, but it's not quite that big.
Well, anyone who reads and writes is very cognizant of this whole "it's not as good as the movie" thing. And so were you trying to kind of keep that in mind as you put it together? How can I retain the structural integrity of this book Or well, did you lucky. Just say, I gotta take a different approach for the stage?
A little bit of both. I mean, good news for me as far as structural integrity is that I have made a living off going off on tangents. So my books rarely have structural integrity. They basically just shoot off in every direction. But this book did have a bit of an arc, so I knew I had to keep that arc in place and then just started hanging things off that arc and seeing how they fit in. I think also there were things that I knew going in that I wanted to avoid, and one of the big ones was if you're going to write in a heartfelt and serious way about fire and EMF, one of the biggest traps you can fall into if you're just putting on a little play and you don't have a Hollywood budget is you don't want to try and create tacky drama. So I knew that, for instance, accident scenes would be a real trap if you do some sort of horrible special effect that's just going to take away from the reflection and the thoughtfulness of the play. Same with firefighting scenes. Nothing would be worse than having firefighters fighting a fire that looks like it was put together at the last minute for an amateur pageant.
You mean no red and orange crepe paper? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. And so in that case, we went the other way. And there I have to give great credit to the director, Jake Lindgren, and also Sarah, the assistant director. And they really focused on imagery and clean lines and going actually in the opposite direction of overwrought and instead operating very sparsely. And the net effect of that has been that I think the scenes are more powerful.
Well,
so, yeah, you make decisions like that, and you have to do things like one of my favorite stories about the play is that I cut my own brother out of the play.
No.
So I have two brothers, and they were both in there, and it quickly became evident that in order to make everything work, I would have to do some composite characters. Now, that's a nonfiction book, and I went to great lengths when I wrote the book to fact-check it, make sure that I was accurate. But when you start, as I said, condensing 100% into 20%, you have to do some composite characters. And so a couple of the things that my middle brother John did, I just assigned them to my other brother Jed. But my favorite moment was, if you know my brother John, he's a big guy with a beard. He runs heavy equipment, and he's got a good sense of humor. I called him one day, and I could hear the bulldozer idling in the background. I said, well, I had to cut you from the play. And there was a little beat, and then he said, I'll survive.
You realize that this will come back to haunt you, though, at some point. Christmas, gift-giving occasions, April Fools.
I've got more coming back to haunt me from him than just that.
Than so just that.
Yeah, it's pretty low on the list.
Just added to the long, exactly, to the long list of things. Was it, you mentioned the book came out in 2002, and I kind of lost track when it had come out. Did you find it, it sounds like if you were able to start to whip this together in 3 days, that you didn't have to spend a lot of time going back and revisiting what you'd written. It sounds like you were pretty much in the moment and kind of up to speed with the book. Did that surprise you, that after all this time?
Oh, no, I probably wasn't very clear there. The sitting down, the actual cutting and moving and writing and just hammering, that took place over 3 days, but that was nowhere near start to finish. That was just what I call the heavy lifting.
Okay.
So for several months, for about 3-4 months prior, I'd been rereading the book, which I hadn't read in years. I mean, I talk about it all the time. But I hadn't reread it page to page. So I did that and took a pile of notes and made, all, you know, marked a copy up real heavily. So when I went into the chicken coop, I had done the prep work. It was more just I just had to force myself to quit fiddling around with it and actually present something nearly whole to the director. But yeah, it was, to go back and reread it, there were a lot of those moments where I'm not even trying to be funny, but you actually say, well, who was this guy? Because we all change over time.
It's a beautiful, beautiful book, and I'm glad that you had the opportunity to perhaps enjoy it again, closer to the experience of those who read it. So, Michael, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We'll get a link set up so folks can get more information about the stage adaptation of Population 485. And thanks.
Yeah, come and see us in Bayfield tomorrow night. We're putting it on at the Big Top. That'd be great.
So thanks so much for joining us, Mike. It's great to always talk with you.
Thank you.
Michael Perry, the author and playwright now of Population 485, joined us this morning as our guest on Northland Morning.